Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
We want to continue this conversation about Syria. We're joined once again by Joshua Landis, the director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the University of Oklahoma. Josh, did you happen to listen to that conversation we just had with Reem Haddad? She's a spokeswoman for the Syrian Information Ministry.
Yes, I know Reem Haddad well.
Okay, well, I wanted to come back with you with something that she said. We were talking to her about sectarian differences, something we've discussed with you before, and this is what she said. We don't discuss sectarian affairs. We are a secular nation. Never in Syria has there been an incident of sectarian unrest. How do you respond to that?
Well, you know, this whole problem, if we take a step back, the Syrian dilemma is a religious dilemma. And that's what we've seen throughout this region of the Middle East, Iraq, Lebanon, Syria. We have a very mixed population. The Alawites, the president is an Alawite, 10% of Syrians, 12% are Alawites, a Shiite offshoot. Throughout history, they have not been considered true Muslims or people of the book like Jews and Christians. Under the Ottomans, until the 20th century, they were not allowed to give testimony in court. They lived in the mountains. Sunnis and Alawites lived together in no town or city of Syria. This began to change in the 20th century. And today, everybody, Alawites and Sunnis, are recognized as Muslims, but there is no discussion about it because high Sunni authorities have not recognized them as Muslims.
Well, then explain her contention that there's never been an incident of sectarian unrest there. And she says also Alawites isn't an accepted term there.
That's not true. There is underlying sectarian tension throughout the region. In 1982, the Muslim Brotherhood rose up and almost overthrew the Assad government, claiming that they were neither Arabs nor Muslims, and that Syria should not put up with them. The government didn't like this, and they smashed the Muslim Brotherhood, killing 6 to 10 to 20,000. We're not sure how many they killed in Hama. The city of Hama was razed, the center city, the old part of the city. This is what we've seen in Iraq. When America went in and threw out the Sunnis from power, 20% of the country, and threw them from the top of society down to the bottom and put the Shiites up at the top. This is what happened in Lebanon during the Civil War when the Muslims tried to displace the Christians who were at the top. That effort failed largely because of foreign intrusion. But we've seen this throughout the region, and this is the Syrian dilemma. Syria has walked up to the edge of the abyss of civil war. And they've realized that in order to replace this government, Syria would have to descend into civil war like Iraq. And that's what the government, in a sense, has threatened the country with. They're not going to resign, and they're not going to leave.
You know, you mentioned earlier this morning when we spoke to you, before we managed to get Reem on the line, that the Syrian constitution is filled with all sorts of flowery language about freedom. And I went back to check, and indeed, You're exactly right. You know, Article 25, Part 4, freedom is a sacred right. The citizens are equal before the law in their rights and duties. The state ensures the principle of equal opportunities for citizens, yet it also ensures that the Ba'ath Party will be the leader party in the government, and that the only presidents can be only a Muslim can be president in Syria. What do Syrians think of this constitution? Do they even know it exists?
Yes. Syrians like the constitution. The constitution is a very good. Essentially, it's good. It's got articles in it, like Article 8, which empowers the Ba'ath Party, which should be removed, and that people are demanding for removal. The trouble is, if you remove those, this Ba'ath Party will fall, the Alawites will be driven for government, and there's a big fear on the part of the Alawites that there will be revenge taken, and that many of them, you know, could be taken to court or just killed. And this is what happened in Iraq. This is what's happened in Lebanon. There is sectarian tension. I mean, there's civil war in Palestine amongst the Palestinians as well. And this is the problem throughout the region. America comes in and says democracy, but democracy can mean a lot of violence. And so, you know, the government, Bashar al-Assad, has ruled in the name of sectarianism. The name of secularism, and saying that everybody is equal. Now, you know, Christians like this, and they support the Ba'athist government by and large, and they fear that if the government falls, the same thing will happen that happened in Iraq, where most of the Christians have been driven out of Iraq now, and many of them are in Syria. And so this is the problem. How do we get out of this for the Middle East? Well, and no government has really found the answer.
We're speaking to Joshua Landis, who's the director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the University of Oklahoma. Well, Josh, I then want to test out the another thing that Reem Haddad, who's the spokesperson for the Syrian Information Ministry, said. She said, and this is a claim the government has been making, that the violence, the actual deaths that have occurred during these protests are the result of armed thugs, gangs in these separate cities, and that the Syrian forces have never actually opened fire on their own people. I'm wondering, is there at least some credibility that, or are there actually groups in Syria that would want to take this as an opportunity to incite violence?
Look, I find it hard to believe. Of course, I don't know this situation. I'm not on the ground there. There have been a lot of claims and counterclaims, and it's clearly quite a messy thing. The government has cracked down. They have done this in the past. And the situation is very scary for the government and for the people.
Josh, you know, I've been listening to you since we first began talking to you a couple of weeks ago. I get the sense that you don't know where this is headed, that on the one hand, they may be pulling back, but you see a very scary scenario.
Well, I think that all Syrians see a very scary scenario, and they realize that in order for them to change this government, it's going to mean war. And that could be a very quick spiral downwards. And I don't think the Syrians want to go there. I think that our Arab revolution and these winds of change are going to stop in Syria, because I don't think the Syrians are prepared for that. And I think that they want the unity, and they're probably willing to sit under this government for a little bit longer. They want to see dramatic change.
But you say that
will happen, I don't know.
And you say it would take war to see it. Joshua Landis, director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the University of Oklahoma. We're talking about the situation in Syria. Thank you so much, Joshua.
My pleasure.